Okay, welcome everyone. My name is Molly Marin. I'm the webinar coordinator for the New York State Technical Assistance Center for RTI. You'll see Dane's name in the chat. It's really me. Dane and I are colleagues. We share the account. My email is in the chat if you need to reach me at any time, and there is also a link to all related files for today's webinar in the chat box. A few other reminders before today. All upcoming professional development opportunities can be found on our webpage. Please do use the chat box for any questions or comments you may have during the webinar. And at the end of today's webinar, we'll share a link to a brief evaluation. We do appreciate your feedback if you could take a few minutes to complete that. If you do complete that at the end of the evaluation, there's an opportunity to enter into a raffle. We're raffling off a special book, Academic Vocabulary in Middle and High School. It's a great resource, and our winner from last week is on the webinar. I'm so happy to see that, Kathy Rogers-Gans from Harrison CSD. And from what I understand, Kathy, your book is on the way to you, so we hope you enjoy that. New York State RTI Technical Assistance Center is pleased to have Dr. Catherine Stahl back with us to present the second webinar in a four-session webinar strand, Teaching Academic Vocabulary Across All Content Areas in Grades 3 through 8. Today's topic is vocabulary assessment. Dr. Catherine Stahl is a clinical professor of literacy at New York University. She is committed to improving student achievement and school effectiveness, especially in urban settings. She is currently the director of the NYU Literacy Clinic, and for over 25 years, she has taught in high-poverty public elementary and middle school classrooms. And at this time, it is my great pleasure to welcome back Dr. Stahl.
Hi, Molly and everyone. Thank you, Molly, and hello to everyone. Good afternoon. It's so wonderful to see all of you, all of you back. And I also just want to, before we get started, send a shout out to Meg and Nicole, who were able to deposit or send to Molly their planning sheets for a vocabulary lesson. And they were so well done. I hope that the rest of you will take a look at them. I think Nicole did one on enlightenment and nationalism, and the vocabulary list that accompanied that, that is associated with the social studies standards. I think it was 10th grade standards, or 10th or 11th grade social studies standards, New York State social studies standards. And Meg submitted one today that had math terms for grades 9 through 11, some geometric terms, and so for a geometry unit. And so and they were so well done and so thorough. So I hope the rest of you will share these as you complete them, either by directly depositing them into the Google folder or sending them to Molly at that address, and she will be kind enough to put them in there, and even taking a look at the ones that have been completed and for your own reference. Also, I hope that you've had a chance to complete the vocabulary knowledge rating scale in your handout folder about this. And this, the one today is specific to assessment techniques. I don't think I gave enough attention to the books that I used last week, so I wanted to make sure that I give attention today for further resources. Throughout the entire series, I will be relying most heavily on the Donna Ogle, Camille Blackowitz, Peter Fisher, and Laura Lang book, Academic Vocabulary in Middle and High School. A lot of the examples I will be sharing come from there, even though some of the research may have come from other sources. That book also has a very nice chapter. It has lots of generic activities that we'll be talking about in October, but it also has a chapter for each specific discipline, which is really helpful. The assessment for reading instruction in that book, we have a chapter that I wrote that's on vocabulary, and it has many of the same ideas that are in the article. So instead of copying the chapter out of that vocabulary book, what I did is I had also written an article with Marco Bravo, and it was appeared in the Reading Teacher several years ago. So we have also put that in your folder for today as a resource. And particularly, one of the assessments, you'll be able to reference back and look back at that, the scoring. You know, there's several options for scoring, and you'll be able to see that article for some examples. And then for today's presentation, I also relied on the work for middle and secondary students in Vocabulary Their Way. And so some of the things that I'll be sharing today come from that book, also a wonderful resource. And be sure to fill out your evaluation so that you, too, can win the Donald Ogle et al. Book, which will be given away every week. This vocabulary assessment, though, as I said last week, I love this topic, and I'm going to really have to watch myself and discipline myself and the time, because I just get so excited about this topic and, the different choices that we have. But it is challenging, and I think some people have avoided vocabulary assessment because of the challenges associated with it. But it's important to do, because we do know that measures of vocabulary and comprehension do correlate. Vocabulary instruction strongly and positively influences the comprehension of text containing those words. However, in a very recent meta-analysis by Wright and Cervetti, they did find that despite our best efforts, there is less transfer when we're teaching. Like, if we're just teaching out of a book, like a vocabulary program book, we would like to think that once kids learn those words or have done those exercises, that it's going to transfer when they need it. But what they found is that's not necessarily the case. However, the good news is that if we're teaching a unit and we do attend to explicitly teaching the vocabulary in that unit, it does increase the comprehension, it does increase knowledge acquisition. And so that's particularly where we want to focus our energies, is on those words that are in the text that we're reading or in the units that we're teaching. Due to the codependency of vocabulary, comprehension, and knowledge acquisition, it is not desirable to separate the assessment of academic vocabulary from the instructional unit. And that's another pair. Not only is that substantiating what Wright and Cervetti found in their meta-analysis, but here are two other vocabulary experts coming in with their review of the research, saying that you don't want to separate the instruction of academic vocabulary into isolated settings. We don't want to just take them and teach them in an intervention setting, for example. We want them to be embedded in the units in which the students are learning them. All right. We don't want to just take a vocabulary program and have a book that every week kids are learning 10 new words. That is not the best use of our time. Our better use of time is teaching and assessing the vocabulary as part of a disciplinary unit. Now, the other challenge of vocabulary assessment is that we need to think about vocabulary in terms of depth and breadth. And when we talk about breadth, it's how many words do we know? But we also want to talk about depth of knowledge of vocabulary, because vocabulary learning is incremental. And when we talk about and when we define depth, we're talking about how well do we know the words? Do we know, that word polysemous, that means that words have many, many definitions and content and are used differently in different contexts? You know, a child can know one definition, but they may not know its definition in the way our content area is using it. So even with children who have a pretty high vocabulary, we still want to know, have we enabled them to make growth in their knowledge of the word? So how well do we know the words, and how easily can we retrieve multiple aspects of a word? Multiple definitions, same definition, but different visual images in different contexts. Also, another challenge is the fact that we are, in order to know a word, we may know a word in listening and reading that we would not be comfortable saying that word in front of our colleagues or writing that word. So, or we might be comfortable writing the word, but we're not really, we've read it a lot, we know the word, but we're not really very comfortable with the the pronunciation of the word, and so therefore we would not be comfortable speaking that word. And so these are other dimensions that when we are thinking about how we assess vocabulary, are we incorporating assessments of breadth and depth, and are we incorporating assessments throughout the unit that address listening, reading, speaking, and writing? As a result of these complexities, one single vocabulary assessment is unable to capture the multidimensionality of vocabulary knowledge and growth. And even the National Reading Panel that says that the more closely assessment matches the instructional context, the more appropriate the conclusions about instruction will be. So even the National Reading Panel, which reviewed bodies of research, is recommendations are connect the assessment to your instruction. Do not do these isolated ways of teaching and assessing vocabulary. They are not useful. Now, on your own, we're not going to do this right now, but on your own, in your package, you have a self-study worksheet. And so at some point on your own, now after today, we will not be meeting until October. And so you'll have, you know, about 3 weeks to, you know, to explore some more activities related to vocabulary. And so one of the things that I want you to do on your own time is to evaluate your own tools, do a self-study of the tools you currently use to assess vocabulary knowledge and vocabulary growth. And I want you for each unit to jot down the vocabulary assessment that you currently use, and then make a decision. Is that testing the volume of words? Is it testing in any way depth of knowledge of a word? Is it only a test of reading, like say something like a multiple choice test? You know, if you have kids matching, you know, selecting, having a blank and then matching a multiple choice answer, or if it's a fill in the blank, or if it's a multiple choice, that would be a reading test. Are you doing any kind of tests of listening? How about speaking, the student's usage of the words and writing of the words? You know, are you accounting for whether in post-test the children have used some of the vocabulary words that you taught throughout the unit? And then you could come down here and actually check what are some of the units. So when you think about several units of study, come down here and check what formats you use. For example, are you using how are you currently assessing your kids and their vocabulary for each unit? Are you doing matching? Are you doing asking them to write a definition? Are you having them to fill in a blank? Are you having them to write a sentence? Are you doing multiple choice of definitions in words, or multiple choice which definition is applied in the passage? You know, you might be doing that during test prep, but hopefully you might be doing some of that even earlier in the year, not as test prep, but or doing it verbally in conversation with kids, illustrating a word, making new words with affixes and roots. And so these are some things that you might be likely to be using now. And so if you could do an analysis of that. One of the things I think you want to ask yourself also is, are your vocabulary measures sensitive enough to document the relationship between word learning, comprehension, and knowledge acquisition? And, you know, are you able to see how even different children have grown throughout the unit? For example, you know, are your high flyers able to grow throughout your unit, and the assessment that you have is really able to track that? So I'd like you to go ahead and do some self-study of what kinds of assessments have been your default kind of vocabulary test up until today. Now, here are some of the kinds of approaches that we're going to be talking about today. You can make this a little bigger. If it's hard for you to see, you can go up to the top right corner and you see four little arrows pointing outward. And if you will hit those arrows, your personal computer will expand this table, and you'll be able to see it somewhat larger. We're going to go through several of these kinds of assessment approaches, all right? So we're going to do some self-directed, which are things like knowledge rating scales, which you happened to do while you were waiting. We will also have some fist to five, exit tickets, notebooks, brainstorming, all self-directed kinds of assessments. Then, of course, the traditional, we're not going to say any more about that because I'm going to assume that most of you are familiar with those. And then we have extended. I think some of these may be familiar to you. Others may not be familiar to you. But you may have used things like concept sorts. You may have used them instructionally. Maybe you've never incorporated them into any kind of assessment of vocabulary growth and knowledge. So we'll be talking about those kinds of things that might be new for you, exclusion activities, which I really am a big fan of. And then, of course, morphology-driven. Everyone, and we spoke a little bit about morphology last week, and every week we're going to talk a little more about it. So those morphology-driven morphology-driven assessments, where you're getting kids to perhaps match meanings with words, match prefixes with what they mean, and then having kids generate words using particular meaningful suffixes or generating words, given a base root to generate more words and possibly define those words. And then finally, the developmental spelling, the Words Their Way upper level spelling inventory. And in that words, the Vocabulary Their Way book, they have some really nice academic vocabulary. They have an academic vocabulary spelling activity, but they do some nice stuff with the derivatives. Like they ask kids a spelling list and have them spell a word, but then they go back to each word, and for 30 seconds they ask kids to jot down some derivatives of those words. And so, you know, that might be something for you to explore as well. So whenever we begin a unit, we want to begin with a survey of student knowledge, all right? And these are, first of all, they are found to be, they're research validated. Kids tend to be, if you lower kids' level of concern and let them know that we're not doing this for a grade, this is for me to see how much of the vocabulary that you know and how deeply I need to teach these words that we're going to find in our unit, then kids, the evidence that has been done by a lot of research on these have been around for a long time, and kids are pretty honest. And so, it's a good idea to begin with some kind of survey of student knowledge of a particular thing. And I would also recommend, let me go back here. I know this, and so when we're rating it, this would be a simplistic one for, say, third grade. I know this word and can tell about it. I have seen this word before. I have never seen this word before. This would be the most simplistic. I like to tailor, just like I tailored the vocabulary assessment self-rating scale. I tailored that for us, and for example, and I said, you know, I know this word and can tell Kay about it. So there's a little difference of what, so I would actually tailor how you put those headings to your students. So Molly, I think this is where we're going to go for our first poll. So folks, this is where you need to pull up the self-assessment that you did, while you were waiting for us to get ready. And I would like you to now display for me your knowledge of each of these. So, for example, go ahead. Now, remember, tell me whether you have this vocabulary fifth to five. Have you used it for vocabulary? Do you know this word? Do you know this word? Or have you just used it more generally? So we're talking using it specifically as a informal vocabulary assessment, or did you just use it for other purposes? And then you have your morphological spelling inventory. Have you used this? and our vocabulary knowledge rating scale. Now, Molly, do you have a permanent record of this? Okay. Good. So I'm glad to see some people, some other folks are using vocabulary knowledge rating scales already.
Sorry, I was muted. I do have a record of this.
Okay, thanks.
Do you want me to slip?
You can put me back on. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, and so now we're going to come into the others. So now we're coming into Molly's switching out the first three, and now she's bringing in the next three. So now we have exclusion tasks. It's one of my favorites. I hope when we end this, it will be one of your favorites too, and that you'll give this a go. Discussion group analysis. Oh, I'm so glad I'm going to be sharing some things that will be new for your toolkits. I love vocabulary assessment. Fill in the blanks. Okay. We'll take another minute with this. Come on, folks. I know more than 19 of you use fill in the blank. Thank you for your participation. How about those last 13 people? I bet there are 13 people who haven't submitted. I bet they know it well and have used fill in the blanks too. I love these polls. It lets me know that you're out there and that you're actually hearing me. It can be very nerve-wracking here if you're just talking to the computer. Okay, Molly, I think we can go to our next four items or next three items, whichever ones you can do. And here we have, these should be some familiar tools that you do probably use. Match multiple choice, matching definition. These tend to be our default ones that we all tend to use most frequently. Now, how about, I know that many of you have used exit tickets, but have you focused it on vocabulary? Have you focused it on vocabulary? If you've used exit tickets, now, there is a bullet there. If you have used exit tickets, but you just haven't used them as a way to assess vocabulary, then you want to fill in the second bullet. Yes, I've heard of it and can describe it, but I never use it to assess. Yeah, I would expect that most of you would be in those top two bullets for these. And then our final one is, again, the concept map. Most of you have used these, but have you used them to assess? Not to just use them, but have you used them as an assessment tool? Okay, Molly, I think we're good to go. Thank you, folks, for sharing this information honestly with me. And you can see that when you know it's not high consequences, that you feel comfortable being honest. And that's really what most of the research has demonstrated, is that these knowledge rating scales are good, simple ways to get a pre-assessment before beginning a unit. Here's an example of one that I used with my second graders for Native American, a unit we were doing on Native American homes. And here is one that Ogle et al. Developed on page 84 of the book. that is for a middle school unit on China, I believe it was. And again, to take a closer look at this, you can actually expand using those four arrows that are pointing outward on your screen, at the top of your screen. Now, I use that as a pretest. I can also use it as my post-test. So that way I have a pre and a post. But what I do in the post-test is I always increase the expectation in the post-test. So I use the same knowledge rating scale, but I require a demonstration of the rating. I would ask the kids, they must provide the definition, they must provide a sentence, or some other more concrete proof of knowledge. For example, in that Native American home, knowledge rating scale, the second graders had to draw a picture of every home, describe the geographic region where the house was used, and list the resources needed to make the, to build the lodging. So they had to do that in addition to just saying, yes, I know what this is. Now, one of the research studies, in his way, and he was doing this with bilingual students, and so they were having to demonstrate their knowledge, increase their accountability in the following ways. This is how he scored them also. All right. So if they said, "I don't remember having seen this word before," it was 1 point. If they said they saw the word but and didn't know what it meant, 2 points. If they could provide a synonym or translation for it, that was 3 points. If they provided a definition, a clear definition for it, they got 4 points. And if they could additionally, in addition to number four, in addition to the definition, could also use it in a sentence, they got 5 points. So more details can be found in the article, all right, the article that you have in your package, or in McKenna Install book, if you happen to have our assessment book as well. This is described much more detail, and it, you could go back and study it. So you want to raise the stakes, and you could give the same pretest, but raise the stakes with higher claims of knowledge. The 5-to-5 is really a more informal, quick way during class time for more vocabulary that you could actually get kids to do a very quick on-the-spot knowledge rating. So teach them to use one finger if they do not know the word. I know a little about the word is 2 fingers. I know a fair amount. And again, see how they're qualifying it. When I read, I know what the word means. 4, I know a lot. 5, I could explain this word to others. You could do like I did. I could explain this word to Meg or to Miss O'Donnell, or I could explain this word to Miss Rogers Gans. So our winner. So I would actually put, you know, make sure maybe if you have a chart in your classroom, have what each of those finger, what each level of reporting knowledge means. And number 5, a whole hand up is I know a great deal, and I could actually teach a lesson on it. Great quick way to get a sense of before you dig into a unit or while you're in the middle of a unit and you're talking about something, getting them to do something like that. It's likely that the 5-to-5, it's likely that this is going to work better for tier two words. Remember, we talked about those last week. Also, exit ticket vocabulary prompts. So, for example, you might say to kids on an exit ticket, list words related to the word such and such, all right, or to the root such and such. So, for example, spire. They would have to come up with spire, in, you know, spirit, inspiration, respiration, so you could do that either morphologically, or you could do it semantically, maybe synonym clusters or, you know, different ways of moving, different ways, you know, different things. This would be fine. This would be great in an ELA class if you're trying to expand children, your students' descriptive use of words. And so you could do something like that as an exit ticket. Then you could even have something like, what I know about the word such and such. And they would just, as the exit ticket, you could give them 3 minutes, time them. In 3 minutes, write everything you know about such and such word. Or what interesting word have you used recently in your writing? What is the most interesting word you studied today? Or what words in our unit have you learned more about or still challenge you? So these are all some great exit tickets. And remember when you saw that diagram last week, so I saw some of you saying, oh, I really like that diagram that talks all about the different components of vocabulary instruction. And one of them was word consciousness. And so these are ways, by doing these exit tickets, you're really increasing your students' word consciousness. If you're saying, what is the most interesting word you studied today? Or have you used yourself? Or did, you know, what's still challenging to you? It's sending the signal to kids that words are part of our life. Words are part of our knowledge acquisition, and it's okay to not know everything. And it's fun, and it piques our curiosity to want to learn more and more about words. And so this kind of thing really increases students' word consciousness. Okay, another activity is pre-unit vocabulary brainstorming. Pre-unit vocabulary words brainstorming. So you have the students engage in small brainstorming session of words they think are likely to show up in an upcoming unit. So they would brainstorm the words independently. Then they might talk about them either in a small group. And finally, you would list and organize those words in a whole class community share. Then you would use concept maps to organize the words that they generated. And then that becomes your word wall. And you will continue to add words to that concept map throughout the unit as you encounter them within the unit that the students did not generate. And this is where I think some exclusion activities might come in. But I actually developed a vocabulary recognition task for my students. And what I did is I created a list, and the way you do vocabulary recognition task is you create a list of words related to the unit concepts. Thank you, Nicole, for that comment. So you're going to create a list of words related to the unit concepts, but you add a proportion of foils. And by foils, I mean words that don't go. They are not going to be in the unit. Then you ask, this is a pretest. You would ask the students to circle the words that they can read and are certain have something to do with the unit. Then you pretest and you would post-test the list. But at the post-test, the students would also categorize the words. So let me give you some examples. All right. So we had, believe it or not, when I was teaching second grade, we had to do a unit on, I was in South Georgia, and we had to do a unit on Australia. All right. So I made a list of words. The students had to put a circle around the words that they were able to read and were sure had something to do with Australia. Hold on a minute, Molly. Could you hold that, make that a little smaller? I'm not quite ready yet. And so you see here, I had several words that were related to Australia, but others that were not, like Atlantic Ocean, all right? So what they would have to do is then identify which words had to do with the unit. So Molly, now we're ready for the poll. What do you think, folks? Is this an assessment that is measuring depth of knowledge or breadth of knowledge? Right. Okay, as our majority of our voters have identified, this is breadth of knowledge. Okay, we can end the poll, Molly. This is breadth of knowledge because it's not really asking them for anything other than reading, the ability to read it and the ability to identify it has something to do with a unit. All right. And the way, there are many ways that you can score this. All right. So I would recommend that you take a look in the Stahl and Bravo article in your package. And in our example, there were 25 related words and 8 unrelated words. So one way to score it is to just to score 1 point for each word correctly circled and then deduct a point if they picked any foils. All right. That's one way to score it. Another way to score it is to just do the percentage. So 20 words correct, they identified 20 words correctly that were real words. They identified 6 words correctly or that they did not circle, that they I selected as foils. 26 out of 33, their total percentage for this pretest is 79%. And hopefully they would be able to do that in terms of selection process. They would be more accurate at the post-test. But again, I like to raise the stakes. So in the post-test, I'm going to raise the stakes, and they're going to have to web those words. So they're going to have to put them in the appropriate categories. So now tell me about this addition to this test. Is this for depth or breadth? Yeah, this is actually getting to the breadth, isn't it? So, or to the depth. So, and some could say it's both. Some could say it's both breadth and depth because you're still doing the whole list that they have to identify, and now they're also having to categorize it to apply the conceptual relationships between those words. So it's doing, when you put the two of them together, you're getting a little of both. Good job. Molly, thank you. We can end this poll. And here we see an example, and again, if you'd like to take a closer look at this, you can go up to those four arrows and expand it. Here we see an exact example of something that was done, I think, for an eighth grade class on the Great Depression. And they're doing the exact same thing. They're doing identify the words and then put them in a concept map. And so this would be what a post-test would look like. There are multiple ways. There's more than one way to score the exclusion activity. You can use the VRT scoring guide for one subscore and then calculate the percentage of correctly categorized hits, all right, and as a web subscore. But again, we're doing a couple different things here. Do you see how this test is multidimensional? And there's more than one item or measure is required to ascertain depth of knowledge. And so we're going to have to do a little more than even just that. You know, but now we've had them. Yes, it's related to the unit, and we're going to categorize it. Another thing that we can do are something we call power maps. This is where kids have to display hierarchical relationships. These assessments call for students to determine and organize terminology in power levels. So, for example, they would basically have to make some kind of a flow chart so that at the top they'd have the big ideas, then they would have the next level are subtopics, and which words are the details that go under those. And I'm going to ask you to do one of these activities. So now I'm going to ask you to actually do one of these. So here we have, I would like you to create a power map. You know, since this is sponsored, our webinar is sponsored by our wonderful host, the New York State RTI TAC, I thought that I would give you an opportunity to refresh your memory on some of our RTI MTSS terminology. So if you would, right now, on a piece of scratch paper, here are some words. Now, I'm giving you a little hint. The one in bold is your power one heading, all right? So all of the rest of the words are going to be level 2 and level 3. So what you need to do is make a flow chart with multi-tiered system of supports, RTI is your heading. What are the next level of headings, and what are the words that come under that? So you're actually making a flow chart. So I'm going to give you about 3 minutes to make yourself a flow chart. Or a hierarchical sketch, or an outline with key heading. Okay, Helen, can you repeat the flowchart headings? The big heading, the only one I'm giving you is the main heading. These vocabulary words all have to do with RTI. They all have to do with RTI. So I am giving you power level one. You have to come up with power level two, and you have to come up with the ideas that go under each of your subtopics at two. So it's going to be a grand total of three levels. RTI is power level one, you're done. You have to come up with the subtopics, and you have to come up with the things that go under each of those subtopics. I hope Teresa Janczak is on our webinar today or takes a look at that so that she sees that I am giving RTI a big plug. So hopefully your power chart looks something like this. We have RTI at the top, MTSS at the top, database decision making, and under the database decision making, you would have valid reliable tests, national norms, universal screening, and progress monitoring. The other subtopic is multi-level interventions, tier one, tier two, tier three. And our third heading is infrastructure. That includes your MTSS leadership team, schedule, and PD. So this is a great one to try with your students, because they have to organize it. I actually saw Camille Blackowitz years ago. In fact, it was at the IRI when I met my beloved husband. I actually saw her do a workshop on this. And what she did is she had all the words on index cards so that we could easily manipulate those. We could easily manipulate them. So I saw that back. It had to be 1996. Okay, how about some embedded vocabulary assessment? Now, this is where it's hard to draw the line between instruction and assessment. And these are all informal assessment methods. Some are more quantitative than others, but these are really very much embedded in other activities that you're doing. And then what you're doing is you're pulling out the vocabulary score or the vocabulary qualitative analysis. So for example, when you're giving a content unit, let's say you've taught, my favorite unit is in the, my favorite Engage New York social studies unit is that fourth grade Native American unit. And I think that unit is classic. I mean, that is the exemplar for what a good unit looks like. And so let's say you're teaching fourth grade and you're doing that unit. So then at the end of the unit, you are going to be giving those kids an assessment that is going to require them to know some factual information, to do some inferential and critical evaluative kinds of thinking. And you're going to have some questions that are multiple choice, but you're also going to have some questions that are constructed responses about things that were in that Native American unit. So what you want to do is have a comparison or even just look at, are they using, I have a set list of so many vocabulary, like, my 15 target words. Are they using those 15 target words appropriately in those constructed responses or in embedded parts of the test? There might be some multiple choice and some other ones, but the vocabulary is being assessed in an embedded way, but in a very deliberate way that you're going to then pull out for analysis. It's not just, yes, oh, it's embedded in there, and I'm not looking specifically at vocabulary. You're going to go back in and in that pool of all the information you're assessing, you're going to extract vocabulary and look at, number one, whether your students made growth and have knowledge of that terminology, and number two, whether how the instruction was. One of the things that I discovered on my exclusion task when I was doing that Australia unit is I did a darn good job teaching Australian animals, but I did not do such a great job on teaching some of the cities in Australia. And so this is a way for us to also analyze our teaching and to provide feedback to us as teachers about whether we're actually teaching vocabulary as well as we think we are. Another one is a discussion group analysis. So there, you're going to sit in, you're going to give your students a prompt, and then you will sit in with a tally sheet and simply, as a listener, record their word use during the prompted small group sessions. Okay? So let's find and look at an example of that. So let's say you're learning, ooh, boy, isn't this timely for today? Ugh. So you're going to provide a prompt, something like describe the mechanisms that ensure a system of checks and balances among the three branches of U.S. government. So you might put that prompt. You have the kids divided into small groups. You put that prompt at their table, all right? And then you could either do it where you are sitting at the table and ticking off who's using which of these words as they're having their discussion, or another way to do it is to even have them self-monitor themselves in doing this. Both ways are good. One way is more instructional. One way is, you know, providing an encouragement to children to use the more sophisticated vocabulary, and another way is really a pure informal assessment. But this is very effective because, you know, we often don't measure whether kids feel comfortable using the words verbally, and we don't monitor that as much as just using it in a sentence. And here, notice we have some of the Tier 3 words with domain-specific academic vocabulary like executive, legislative, judicial, veto. And then we have some things like interpretation and declare, which are academic vocabulary, but which are relevant to this particular unit. And here is one. Meg, maybe you can carry out. You've got a good start to your geometry unit in that list of vocabulary terminology that you provided for us. And now this might be an assessment that you can apply to that same unit, because this is one that I have used as examples. I think I used this as an example in both the Stahl and Bravo article, as well as in the McKenna and Stahl assessment book, is throughout the course of a unit, you can actually have a check sheet of the different ways that you have assessed some of the vocabulary in your unit. And it might just be not all 20 words that you selected for the unit. You might just pick 8 words that you're going to assess in some of these different ways. But so, for example, you heard the child use it in discussion. You saw that you had a little writing activity that the kids had to do. And a writing activity, folks, is as simple as a diagram that they're labeling. It's that simple. Okay. It's not that they're writing a report on geometry. It's we're talking a diagram. They wrote the label for it. Applied, how did they apply it in maybe some hands-on activities or in science? It would be in a science experiment when they're working on a project or a research project. Or was it actually a part of the test that you gave at the end of the unit? And so this is a way to sort of monitor different ways that you are getting at listening, speaking, reading, and writing. Now, here we come again to what about morphology? What about morphology? A systematic approach to morphology is a powerful, powerful tool for independent student word learning, okay? It's an important key for English language learners and English-only students, all right? Because a wonderful website is this Spanish Cognates website, wonderful, that displays all the cognates and relationships to English morphemes. I happen to recommend that you decide as a full school what your approach is to going to be organizing this instruction, because I think what happens too frequently is that I think often, you know, and morphology does need to be addressed. We do want to give, that's one of those of that chart, you know, that chart that you liked last week. This is the part where we're giving students strategies to become word users, word learners. And so we do want to have explicit instruction in morphology. And so, but I don't think, you know, what often happens is we end up, the sixth grade teacher teaches a list of the morphology, the seventh grade teacher might be teaching the exact same list. And we never get to the more obscure ones, or we're never making any kind of developmental progression in a systematic way along that list. Good, Meg. Thank you for that comment about the, you know, the different kinds of learning. So I'm glad that you're finding that useful. Okay. So, but to get back to the morphology, is that we want to have we want in our school, whether it's a, you know, grades 3, 4, and 5 in an elementary school, whether it's 6, 7, and 8 in a middle school or beyond, we want to sit down as either a literacy team or an ELA team, and those would probably be likely to be the people to say, okay, where are these words going to be, are these morphemes going to be explicitly taught and taught well, all right? We don't just want to do a drive-by approach, which is what happens too often. And so I think that there are some, you know, great suggestions in academic vocabulary and spelling inventory. Doing the academic vocabulary test, the spelling inventory are great ways to assess where our kids are. I also like the words their way, derivation, stage, scope, and sequence. And I like, you know, so they actually have a scope and sequence for morphemes. And so I think it would be a great idea to, as a school, say, okay, in sixth grade, fall semester, we're going to cover this set of morphemes, and spring semester, we're going to cover this set. Seventh grade, you're going to cover these bases and these, you know, and these base words these morphemes, these derivatives. Eighth grade, these. And so that way, as a school, we know where those are being covered. Then the students will then get distributed practice of those morphemes in their content classes when they're actually learning about them. So, for example, I think the example I used last week about immigration, immigrant, emigrate, then in the social studies class, those, that MIG, that, you know, that would be revisited there, and it would be talked about, and it would be revisited in those particular words that are relevant to that unit to enhance knowledge acquisition in that unit. So that way, you're confident that you're having the definitional, explicit instruction happening. You're confident that you're having distributed practice that is contextual happening in the disciplinary classroom. That's an approach that I recommend. Also, Tim Shanahan, I don't know whether any of you follow Tim Shanahan's blog. If you do not follow Tim Shanahan's blog, I heartily recommend it. I heartily recommend it. Every week he has such important questions that come from teachers like yourselves who are thinkers and doers. And they're thoughtful questions. And then his response, typically, you know, a research-based response, and also with all his years of experience. And just last week, he talked about teaching morphology, and he had some ideas. I saw it after I had completed this presentation and sent this to Molly, but I would recommend that this, in the next couple of weeks, you go to that Tim Shanahan blog and talk about the way he talks about teaching morphology, and he consulted with a couple experts he knew. I didn't know the two fellows that he spoke with, or I think it was two men, I'm not sure. It was two researchers that he spoke with about doing teaching morphology. It was a very excellent discussion of teaching morphology, and I recommend that you take a look at that. And that's the Tim Shanahan blog. But a school-wide approach is very important to morphology. Okay, so we are we're coming to the end. We're going to have time today for questions. We have plenty of time for questions, but let me just put out there where we are now, all right? So in preparation for Webinar 3 and Webinar 4, I'd like to see you working on putting Webinar 1 and 2 into action. I think we had a lot of good content and lots of things that you can be doing in the next 2 or 3 weeks before we meet again to put these ideas into action. I recommend that you begin planning 1, 2, or 3 upcoming content units that you have coming up that you're working on, all right? Or that the people that are in your school are working on, all right? Then examine and analyze. Remember that to do on your own. Examine and analyze your current vocabulary assessment processes. How are you currently doing it? Think about what you've currently got in place. We don't want you to throw out the baby with the bathwater. Too often, these pendulum swings in literacy instruction, throw out one thing, bring in something else. No, you also can't reinvent the wheel every time you're adding and tweaking something. So look at what you've currently got, how you currently, or how the teachers that you're working with are currently assessing vocabulary knowledge. Think about what are the, which ones, and use that sheet, that worksheet that helps you analyze, is this testing depth or is it testing breadth? Does it get at reading? Is that all that it's testing? How am I testing the listening of these words? How am I, you know, whether kids are understanding it when I'm teaching the class? I know a lot of times, even in my classes, at the master's level at NYU, I know sometimes my students are not understanding the vocabulary I'm using in terms of like phoneme or morpheme or a bound morpheme or a free morpheme. And so think about whether you are your students able to understand the vocabulary you're using. So do you have any tests of that? How about writing? Are you having any kind of analysis of them using the words in their writing in authentic responses, constructed responses to your test items, other kinds of writing exercises? And then speaking. I love the discussion one. I think that's really a good one to have kids engaging in small group discussions and really having opportunities to use these words. So please be, thinking, go ahead and do some homework over the next 3 weeks at, doing your selection process for at least one unit, but maybe as many as three, figuring out what you currently are using, and challenge yourself to incorporate 3 brand new vocabulary assessment techniques that you learned today to each upcoming unit. You can do it. Fist to five and exit tickets count. Maybe stretch how you're using fist to five. Maybe focus some exit tickets purely on vocabulary. Stretch into some of those broader dimensions of knowledge. All right? And write down everything in your electronic unit plan so that way you can continue building on that so that when we come back in together, let's see what those dates are. So we're going to be back together in a little less than, about 2 weeks, Thursday, October 18th. And so if you get all this set up, you get your word selection set up, you get your assessment set up, and then we will, in our next 2 webinars, we're going to be focusing on instruction and adding tools to your instructional toolkit. October 18th will be how to teach a word. I'm going to give you 2 different ways to provide explicit instruction of a word. We're going to talk about hypermedia dictionaries, and everybody uses that Frayer model with the 4 squares. But I have some additional ideas for you to add to that four square model. Then on the following week, the 25th, we're going to use possible sentences, story impressions, vocabograms, and semantic feature analysis. So we now have time for questions. I hope I'll be seeing all of you back with us on October 18th. And if I'm able to stick around for a few minutes, if you had some questions, we had quite a bit of content.
Great. I see people typing while you're typing. I'm just going to link to the survey in so that people have it.
Thank you. Yes.
And again, we are going to raffle off a book if you complete the survey and put your information in. Helen, yes, you can email the electronic plan to me, and I'll make sure Dr. Stahl gets it. My email is up higher in the chat. I will put it in one more time so you have it.
We utilize Patricia Cunningham's prefix-suffix lesson so you can speak to. I'm not familiar. I'm familiar with some of her work. Like, I use her work with the Nifty 50 Thrifty, but I'm not familiar with her actual prefix-suffix lessons. But I do love her Nifty 50 Thrifty, which gives children a chance to learn the morphemes that are most common. Is that what you're referring to, Shava? The Nifty 50 Thrifty? Okay, good. All right. So I like the Nifty 50 Thrifty. However, I'm not sure it's comprehensive enough. So I use the Nifty Thrifty 50. I use that in the reading clinic when we only have the kids for like 24 lessons. So that's enough for us to cover in 24 lessons with our reading clinic. But for a school, I don't believe that's really comprehensive enough. I do think that's appropriate for you to use in a clinical setting. I think, you know, for your intervention. So, for example, a special ed teacher, that's a great tool. An intervention, a tier three teacher, great tool. Not so much as a school plan, because I think that that if you look at the scope and sequence in the words their way, they really take a very systematic approach to all the prefixes, all the suffixes, and then each of those common morphemes that are Greek and Latin roots. And I think that in the Nifty 50 Thrifty, we don't really get to that. And it's done a little, I will not say the word, it's not haphazard, it's deliberate. She chose those prefixes and suffixes, but I think that there are some that are omitted that we want to include in our curriculum. Does that help, Chava? I would say, great question, Joanna. I would say that for some of those generic kinds of vocabulary things, and that you really just have to consider that as a kind of comparative measure. Is it, you know, so that you're comparing, do you have norms on that? Answer the question. Is it a standardized test that you have norms on? And who is the company that puts it out? What company is putting it out? Because it definitely cannot be you can't use it to inform instruction. It's probably not going to be very good to predict comprehension either. See, and that's what that, if any of you, that Wright and Cervetti article is really fantastic. Okay, Ames Webb. Yeah. So, I mean, I think they've done it. I don't know what corpus they've used to gather that vocabulary, but it's not going to help you inform instruction. It's only going to give you a category. It's only going to give you that red, yellow, green in terms of these kids are possibly at risk of having low levels of vocabulary, which in turn can be an indicator that they may be headed for some comprehension difficulties. But the corpus of words is unknown. It's not related to anything. So it's basically, it's just very generic. It's very generic. It's not providing you any cue to instruction. And what I worry about, Joanna, in situations like this is that often well-intentioned teachers like yourself, you take that score from that test, from that screener. And so you feel like, oh, well, this tells me I should be in my intervention. And I don't know what role you are in, whether it's you're a special ed teacher or whether you're an interventionist, Joanna, or something else. But what happens is well-intentioned teachers like yourself sometimes would take that score and would then say, well, I think I need to teach my kids some vocabulary. But who knows what vocabulary to teach? It's, you know, you're better off teaching and supporting, one, the morphology plan that your school develops. Be supportive of that. Number two, use it, you know, but you want to use your teachers, the content vocabulary. You know, if you're an ICT teacher, then you can support that vocabulary instruction in the ICT classroom. But I'm not sure that even for that content area vocabulary that's happening in the classroom, that that's the best use of a tier two, tier three special ed teacher's use of her time is teaching those words. I get confused. You're using it, right, you're using it to identify risk level. Well, risk level at what? The only thing I could say is, well, then that child did not know the way those words were used and asked in that particular instance. I hope you're not using it to put kids in particular groups, because the groups, you know, I always like to, when I'm talking RTI, I usually have a little scale, a balance scale. And so if we're on the left side of our balance scale, if we're testing this as a way for kids to get into an intervention group or to make a decision about a kid, well, then over on the right-hand side, I should have an intervention that is matching that assessment. And so I guess my challenge with what I'm not really able to understand about this is I wouldn't know what intervention to provide to a kid that shows up at a high-risk level. I would be puzzled by that. Yeah, it's not exactly. You can't really use it as a diagnostic. Other questions? That's a great discussion. Great discussion. Thank you for posing that. I'm not seeing anyone else writing. Thank you all so much for attending, and be sure to put October 18th on your calendar. I will see you then. And don't forget to fill out the evaluation and hopefully win one of those wonderful academic vocabulary books. And Kathy, congratulations on your win. Use it. I hope you'll use it and enjoy it. Thank you, everyone.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Kay. Appreciate it as always, and we look forward to connecting with you again on October 18th. Goodbye,
Thanks,
everybody.
Molly. Thank you, Molly.
You're welcome.